Colombia is turning 50. Happy birthday, Colombia. And the celebration continues throughout September.
Well, the theme is appreciating the past, and that's the first segment of the birthday program, where we've orchestrated a lot of the events about the appreciation for Colombia, how it started, how it has evolved, and that's at every level, from school children all the way through to adulthood. And our second part of this as a celebration will be imagining the future. So we also want to look forward. It's not just about looking at the past.
The Howard County Library System has a new program they'd like you to be part of.
So at a human library, you come in and you can check out a person who's had a different life experience than you, whether they're a different religion, different culture, immigrant, community, life experiences.
And how about taking a walk through historic Ellicott City?
There's some significant things that have happened and come and gone over the years. The trolleys, the movies have been in town. The ghost tours. So we talked about a couple of the ghosts on this history tour.
Everybody loves ghosts.
Yeah, so we threw a couple ghosts in there, and the rest of it is just factoids about different denominations. You know, desegregation of sexes and races and things that have happened over the centuries, and then of course how industrious the town became, how much it throve since the Ellicotts established it back in 1771.
These stories coming up in April's episode of Hoka Journal, starting right now. Hi, and welcome to Hoka Journal, the show where we highlight the unique and interesting people, businesses, nonprofit organizations, and events happening right here in Howard County. I am your host, Cris Oviedo. It's been 50 years since the city of Colombia first came to be. And of course, this calls for a big celebration. But we can't just celebrate this beautiful town without reflecting back on where we started and looking forward into the future. And to talk about this and more, I have in studio with me Marlis East, and she is the managing director of Colombia's 50th birthday celebration. Welcome to our studio, Marlis.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you for coming into our studio today.
Pleasure.
And before we dive into the celebration of the 50th birthday of Colombia, why don't we talk a little bit about you and how you became involved with this celebration?
It's for me a joy and a privilege to be able to celebrate Colombia's 50th year. I started at the Rouse Company way back when shopping centers were the place to be and marketing those was fun, and spent the majority of my career at the Rouse Company and then traveled off to do a couple of other things. But when the 50th birthday came around, it was time to reflect on a career and also share the joy of having listened to Jim Rouse through the struggles of Colombia, which were not always easy, whether it was money or approvals or whatever, to see it come to be. So I actually, my first event in Colombia was the groundbreaking for the Rouse Company building, which is now Whole Foods. And needless to say, that was in 1974. And we have had a lot to celebrate since then and continue to look forward. So coming here now and putting the events together for 26 weeks has been a reflection, but also a great privilege to put forth.
So I love that you continue to go back to the word reflection, and it has this idea of reflecting back in the 50th, in the 50 years that Colombia has been a town for. How has that been reflected in the celebration?
In the celebration, well, the theme is appreciating the past, and that's the first segment of the birthday program, where we've orchestrated a lot of the events about the appreciation for Colombia, how it started, how it has evolved. And that's at every level, from school children all the way through to adulthood. And our second part of this as a celebration will be imagining the future. So we also want to look forward. It's not just about looking at the past.
In the 50 years that Columbia has been around, I'm sure that there have been great partnerships, great organizations that have come to be, and I'm sure that they are all taking part of the celebration. Do you mind talking a little bit about the people who have partnered or the organizations who have partnered into making a big celebration success?
Well, it really starts with our board of directors for Columbia's 50th, and the 22 members are very representative of the community from the college, the hospital, the library, and all the major institutions that have such a major role in today's life of a Columbia resident. And the businesses as well, from the Howard Hughes Corporation to the Mall in Columbia, which is owned by General Growth now, all of them have been tremendous companions in helping this program evolve and supporting it with either resources, in-kind services, or financially. And all of it has made the things that we have on our calendar possible.
How about the residents? Have the residents had the opportunity to participate in the celebration yet?
Absolutely. In a way, maybe not as they did with parades in the early birthdays, which is a little more challenging these days to gather a parade together. But when it comes to lakefront activities and all of the things that we will be hosting over the course of the summer, yes. And there are many individual groups like the Conservancy, it just goes on in terms of the variety of organizations and people and the neighborhoods from the 10 villages and all of them working with us as well.
Absolutely. And I know that the kickoff event was a great success at the mall. And there were, my feed on Facebook was just that day inundated with pictures and videos from the mall. I actually happened to be at the mall around lunchtime, and I got to see the Irish parade kind of thing that went inside the mall, and the Chinese, I guess, parade also with the dragon. Yeah. And it was really festive, and it was just really, really nice to see how people, even people who did not necessarily realize what was going on, they were immediately drawn to it. And to celebrate diversity from the beginning of the celebration of Columbia, I think that speaks big to the message maybe that you guys are trying to show.
Sure. If you look at our logo, you'll see a lot of colors, and it's very intentional that as a community, we have a wonderful representation of cultures and talent. And when we kicked off the birthday on March 19th, the whole idea was to remind the community how fortunate we are and how talented we are. And there were over 300 performers that day between 11 in the morning and 4:30 in the afternoon. And it was just a very colorful and lively celebration. It was interesting that a lot of parents with small children said, I wish we could do this all the time, because I think there's a desire on the part of, especially with parents with small children, to have a place where things like this happen on a regular basis.
And, the sense of unity that it brings, because that's what I gather from it, because when you think about a celebration of the town, I was not expecting to see an Irish piper going through the mall. I was not expecting to see a Chinese dragon walking through the mall. It was like, wait a minute, I thought we were celebrating Columbia. But then when you think a little more about it, it was like, well, if you want to celebrate Columbia, you have to celebrate diversity.
You really do.
Because when you're driving around or walking around, you look around and we all look very different. And you can see that we have, it's a little melting pot, like it's been called in the past, for sure. So I really appreciated that. And it really brought a sense of curiosity in my, inside of my brain. Like, if this is just the kickoff event, I wonder what else they have prepared for everybody and what else we have forward to look in this. How many months is the celebration going
it's
to be?
It's 26 weeks total. Mm-hmm. So we'll end on September 24th. And we can't do the Sunday, March 19th every day, but we have at least a highlight within each month with a very strategic purpose.
So why don't we just dive right into that? And you tell us more about those great events coming up.
I would have to say that one of the greatest thrills has been working with the Howard County Public School System on the April 23rd event, which is Sunday. April 23rd at Meriwether Post at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There will be 22 school buses with 800 students that will roll into Meriwether to perform on the stage, a place that they haven't before. And they're now currently rehearsing in their individual schools and will never have had a mass rehearsal until the morning on that day.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's as proud as we are of the Howard County Public Schools, the fine arts program is really going to shine. And each of the schools has selected, each of the high schools has selected a Jim Rouse quote, which they are basing their performance on, and they will appear in the order in which they came to the county. So Howard High will be first, and it will work through the 90-minute performance all the way to Marriott's Ridge. Mm-hmm. But it's really a celebration of the future with the kids, but it's also a celebration of their talent, giving them an opportunity to see each other and also an opportunity for them to be on a stage that they might not otherwise have been.
Absolutely. Stage where international artists have performed.
Here comes Paul Simon. Here comes all kinds of great talent, for sure. Yes.
Absolutely.
So that one is under the direction of Gino Malafina, who's the Howard County Public Schools fine art leader. And it just promises to be jammed with good things.
For tickets for that event, is this a free event?
It's a free event. Okay. It is a free event. Tickets will be distributed, but only as people arrive so that there's direction in terms of the seating. But
will there be a number, a maximum number of people that can assist the event?
Not really, because we'll overflow into the lawn, weather permitting, and the tickets are being issued to the schools and their parents first. But there's a 5,000 seat.
So there's plenty of room,
seats,
for everybody to come and enjoy this. April 23rd, at what time does it start?
It starts at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's 90 minutes. I skipped over April 22nd, and I really don't want to do that. On April 22nd, here at Howard Community College, there will be a special day where 50 trees are going to be available for purchase at $1,000 a tree. But the idea of this is Greenfest, and it's going to be called Columbia's 50th Scholarship Forest, Growing the Future.
Oh, great.
And so the 50 trees, 50 tree limit, will then convert into an endowment for scholarship. And it will be in perpetuity. And that we really are looking forward to. And those that buy a tree will then have their names placed on a plaque that will go on the wall in Duncan Hall.
Oh, great.
So it's a special Earth Day here at the college.
Greenfest is wonderful, and we are always part of this event, and we will be there this year again live. We'll be bringing Greenfest live through our station on that day. Now, will the trees that are purchased, will the owners of the tree take them, or will they be planted
They'll
here?
Be planted for the person or the entity that buys the tree, but they will be planted here in a special here at the college in a special spot that's been designated. It will literally become on campus a scholarship forest.
That's great.
That's Mr. Bob Marietta's idea, and we applaud him.
Bob is always looking for ways to make the college more green, more sustainable, and he does a really good job.
He does, and it converts now into green on the scholarship side for the students, so that's even more exciting.
There's no more green than that.
Yeah, for sure. Then we jump into April, and there are all kinds of events that go from exhibits all the way through to gardening to you name it. Hoko Palitzo is also having a poetry festival on the 27th of April. Lots of great, enriching kinds of events. And I would just say go to the website, columbiamd50.com, and check in to see what those listings are. In May, we're really excited to be celebrating our founder, Jim Rouse. Hmm. So on May 9th, at 9 o'clock in the morning here at Howard Community College, there will be special presentations of authors. Josh Olson wrote Jim Rouse's biography, but also we'll have a guest from Harvard, Anne, who is coming in and talking again about how Columbia fits and where it needs to think and where it needs to grow. So the morning from 9:30, the presentation actually begins at 9:30 through noontime, will be filled with varying perspectives of people participating through forums and roundtables. And we are just really excited about that.
So thinking about the future, let me stop you right there. Thinking about the future of Columbia, why is it important to have, you know, some an event like this where we can, and if I'm understanding this right, we can get input and feedback from residents already here when we're trying to think how Columbia needs to be seen in the future and how it needs to continue to develop?
I think some would say Columbia's been asleep for a little while and needs a major boost forward to grow into its ultimate potential. So with the advent of buildings getting taller and more parking garages, there's a little bit of unsettledness about what does this all look like in the future. So when you have someone like Ann Forsyth coming from Harvard, whose job is to talk about urban planning, it's an opportunity for perspective to see how all these pieces need to fit and how we need to be thinking. If we're not going to be driving cars anymore, what is all this going to be? So there's a lot to think about, and it's wonderful to have very enlightened perspective come to the table. And it's a chance to listen. And this is not 1967 anymore. So we're not about our, they say we have more asphalt in Columbia than we have trees sometimes. So we really have to think about how this all goes.
But, you know, I do have to say that I feel that Columbia, it is forth thinking, because we have the Horizon Foundation and other organizations like this already thinking about the needs of the people. That's part of the reason why the streets are being redeveloped in order to facilitate biking to work.
Walkability.
Exactly. Yes, so I think that in many, many ways, Columbia is forward-thinking. So it's nice to see that we continue to be and continue to stay on that path to ensure that as we continue to grow as a town, we are looking at all the different pieces and how to bring them all together to make the town to keep the town as good as it is or make it even better.
No question about it. We are over 100,000 people now, and now with, as most of the new buildings are certainly several stories with what you would call density, this will bring more people with more needs, and
right,
we just need to be about the business of being the future.
Absolutely. Any other events? The list is amazing. I mean, just for our listeners, if you have not been to the website yet, and that was
ColumbiaMD50.com. Yes.
ColumbiaMD50.com. If you have not been to the website, or if you have not picked up a little, I'm going to call it a magazine because it has enough pages to be called a magazine, where it has just a list of events. And I'm talking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 and more pages where it just has the list of everything that's coming up in the next few months. You definitely need to go either get a copy. It's called A New City, Celebrating Columbia's First 50 Years and the Next. Or you can just go to the website and you will see, you can browse through all of the events happening and coming up through the month of September.
Those are available at the library.
And Columbia Association also has them at their front desk.
Yes.
So other events that you would like to highlight, because there's just no way that we can cover
them. We can't cover them all, but I would just say this. The month of June will be filled with the birthday month, and we have a special attraction coming in from England on the week of the 16th, 17th, and 18th of June. And Columbia's actual birthday is the 21st, but the weekend before we'll have the large festival that everyone's come to enjoy at the lakefront. And that will be done by the Columbia Arts Festival, Festival of the Arts. And then in addition to this attraction, which is a three-story walk-through light experience that we are very excited.
I have seen pictures. I have seen videos. I have seen, you know, all this online. And I'm so looking forward to it.
I can. You have to take your shoes off when you go through.
Really?
And only,
okay.
Only 80 people are allowed through at a time.
Okay.
But it is definitely going to be worth
absolutely
the trip.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I can't wait for that one. That's something I already have on my calendar, and I've been telling people, it's like, you have to mark your calendars for these dates, and you have to come and see it, because we don't get this every day.
No, we sure don't.
Yeah.
There are several great art exhibits, one here at the college, others at the Howard County Arts Council. But we are also going to celebrate the faith community in September, which is another very diverse, important piece of this community. And actually, Reverend Turner over at St. John's Baptist is heading up an interfaith church service, and we will celebrate on September 17th, the actual day of the first church service in Columbia, and interfaith service at the Chrysalis. And it will include all denominations, and it will be music and all the things that make this a special place.
Education, arts, faith, diversity. I mean, you guys have thought of it all.
We're trying.
If anybody out there is listening and it's maybe thinking, well, you know, maybe I had an idea or something of an event, is there still time for people to reach out to you guys and suggest?
Certainly. Absolutely. It's not over till it's over. And the 24th of September is the time that we've elected to close. But between now and then, anything can be tucked in. And if there's time to put it together, we absolutely will consider it.
And what's the best way to contact you guys and give you ideas?
Actually, email's best, probably. And all of our contact information is on the website. It's a little confusing speaking it, but it's Marlis, M-A-R-L-Y-S dot E-A-S-T dot ColumbiaAssociation.org.
So if you guys have ideas, if you guys have... either are new citizens to Columbia but just have come to love the city, or have been longtime residents and would like to celebrate Columbia in a certain way, reach out to Marlis. She's there ready and to just get your emails, talk to you about your ideas, and see if it's feasible to come up and add it to the calendar.
Sure.
Marlis, there's no birthday celebration without cake.
We will have a cake. We will have a cake on the 17th of June, and that's a Friday, but we're keeping that under wraps right now.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough.
Cake. There will be cake.
Just because, you know, you can't celebrate a birthday without a birthday
cake. Gotta have cake.
Anything else you would like our listeners to know, or anything that you would like to tell our listeners before we wrap our conversation up today?
I would just say this is a time where we all have the joy of celebrating a place, but it really is for all ages. It's for all reasons. And just take the time, because we've really tried to make this free and very open in terms of approachable events, and not tackle a lot of attractions that cost a lot of money to participate in. So it's strollers and wheelchairs and everything. That's how we want this to be.
So take advantage of all of the events. Like we said earlier, go to the website, check out the events. Personally, not being a Columbia resident for a very long time, really. I mean, I've been in Howard County, I think, for about close to 10 years now. I have to say, more than just celebrating a place, it's celebrating a way of living, because you do not get that openness, you do not get that sense of safety, you do not get that welcoming environment so easily in other places. Mm-hmm. So that's why I continue to be a Howard County resident, and that's why I have fallen in love with this place that I now call my home. So come and celebrate, find the events. I guarantee you, if you look through the list, you're going to find something that is appealing to you, and you're not going to find only one, you're going to find many. I guarantee that. Marlis, thank you so much for taking the time to come into the studio today and talking with me about the celebration.
Thank you.
And for HOCA Journal, I am Kitty Oviedo, and we will be right back.
Teen Health Matters, airing every Tuesday at 5:30 and Sunday at 12 noon on Dragon Digital Radio.
And one of the things that I hold as a tenet is that every young person deserves to have, as a right, an activated and engaged adult throughout childhood, adolescence, and into young adulthood.
You can take us with you by downloading Dragon Digital Radio on the iPhone and Android App Store.
Welcome back to Howard County Journal. Matt Trudell here, and in studio today we have, from the Howard County Historical Society's walking tours, we have the tour guide Tony Hughes and the executive director Sean Gladden. Thank you guys for joining me.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great being here.
So Sean, tell us a little bit about what the Howard County Historical Society is about. Like, what do you guys do?
We are the primary repository for artifacts and records pertaining to Howard County's past. We have been an organization since 1958. We have a museum, which is at the, which is 8328 Court Avenue, which is right next to the Circuit Court. It is an old Presbyterian church, dates back to the 1890s. It was turned over to us in 1960 and has been our museum ever since. We also have a state-of-the-art archives on the second floor of the Miller Branch Library, which is at 9421 Frederick Road. At the archives is where we keep most of our records pertaining to Howard County history. We've got documents and records, some of which date back to the late 1600s. So primarily we are we collect these items, and then we make them available for exhibit and for research.
I'll ask Tony first, but I would like your answer on this as well. How did you guys get involved with this?
How do we get involved with the tours?
Yeah, how with the tours or even just working with in Old Ellicott City?
Okay. I'm a resident. I live right across the river in a little historic town called Owella. And I've been working with the tourism department as a ghost tour guide for several years, almost a decade. And when Sean approached, and he had a beautiful 24-page script, a huge, very very intense script that he wanted to get out there into the public, you know, we negotiated some tour guide things, and I stepped in and got this thing mostly memorized. It's a little hard memorizing, you know, word for word, all those pages. But, you know, I'm a great historian local. I work here locally at the television channel. We do a lot of outreach locally, and this seemed to fit. It was a perfect fit for me. So I'm really happy to be a part of the tours.
How did you get involved?
We had always wanted to expand the programming. I think that's one of the things we do at the Historical Society. You know, we didn't just want to be the type of organization that has a museum and archives and that's it, you know, kind of open it and people will come. We wanted to do some a lot of public programming in order to draw visitors to our sites, mainly for anything from we do concerts at the museum, we have a lecture series that we do. And one of the things we identified was that there wasn't, although there were walking tours of historic Ellicott City, most of them really focused in and around Main Street. And what we wanted to do is kind of add a little bit more of I guess what we call the top of the hill, starting right around the historic Mount Ida Mansion and Patapsco Female Institute, and then also obviously include the museum, the courthouse, and then work our way down to Main Street. So really a true historic walking tour. And so when we identified that as something that we wanted to do, I had a few interns probably about 2 years ago start to work on the research for it. And together we came up with this script that Tony just mentioned. And it was a very detailed script with, like I said, about 24 sites maybe? Mm-hmm. About 24 sites, I believe. And once we developed the script, we started marketing it. I think we rolled it out last year. By the end of the year, we had really seen an increase thanks to word of mouth and some social media advertising. I think by the end of the year, we were getting consistently between 10 and 20 people per tour.
Wow.
And it's starting to pick up again this year, as now the weather's getting consistently nice. We had some problems early this year because of the rain, but it's been a success, and then people really love it.
So now let's talk a little bit more about the walking tour. So it's the second and fourth Saturday of the month, and it runs from April to October?
April through October, from 11 to about 1:30.
11 to 1:30. So what can we expect on the walking tours?
Well, like Sean just mentioned, we start at the top of the hill around the historic Mount Ida Mansion, and we discuss a little bit of the Ellicott's history, what was going on before they got here, as well as what happened up until the time we start talking about the Patapsco Female Institute. And then, you know, like I said, there's several stops. And the really good thing about this tour is it's all downhill. So it's easy. I mean, downhill, literally, it's you start at the top of the hill and you walk past the Historical Society, which is the old Presbyterian Church, the District Courthouse, the Emory Jail, the Firehouse, and then turn the corner and go back through Tongue Row and then come down Old Columbia Pike, right down Main Street to the B&O Railroad Museum. But in between the B&O Railroad and Mount Ida, there's more than 20 stops. And, you know, there's so much to talk about. I try not to drone on and on about the, you know, about the history of the place. You know, there's just some significant things that have happened and come and gone over the years. The trolleys, the movies, have been in town. The ghost tour. So we talk about a couple of the ghosts on this history tour.
Everybody loves ghosts.
Yeah. So we threw a couple of ghosts in there, and the rest of it is just factoids about different denominations. You know, desegregation of sexes and races and things that have happened over the centuries, and then of course how industrious the town became, how much it throve since the Ellicotts established it back in 1771.
Do you stop at the same stops every time? Is it like pretty much the same tour every time?
It's pretty much the same tour every time.
But it sounds like there's so much there that it's like you could lose something in the mix, so doing it multiple times would be beneficial.
As a good tour guide, you have to kind of look at your crowd and see if they're ready for it. So if people are starting to fade, and I mean physically, sometimes it's brutal. You know, 90 degrees on a Saturday morning.
Oh yeah.
This is the tip top of the afternoon. You know, you're walking downhill. It's pretty strenuous. You're fighting with a bunch of crowds. So if I don't find a good location where I can stand safely and give the monologue for each one of the stops, sometimes we might go past it, or I might bring it up once we've gone past it and stopped at another place. I try not to linger very long at any of the stops. So, you know, three minutes tops. If I can point around the different buildings, it's always a good thing.
Now, are people allowed to, I guess, like ask questions, which you could elaborate on, or?
We get a lot of good questions. I'm good at elaboration. You know, usually a nice high word count. Some of the questions I have to always refer back to Sean on. You know, I get a few stumpers every now and again. The Maryland gold. What was the element in the paint that made Maryland gold? Do you know what that was? Do you remember what you told me?
No, I think I had to look that one up. Yeah, I mean, there's always, you know, and I used to do tours down at Fells Point, and I've actually stood in for a couple of tours when Tony can't do them, and you always get those questions you just can't answer, and I always tell folks, I'm like, look, you know, although I may be a historian, I don't know everything, and you know, I'll have to go and look it up, but that's good. It's always good to engage with your visitors. I mean, one of the worst things you could do on a tour is have folks with you for 90 minutes and they don't say anything. And then you're like, you guys having a good time?
Exactly. Questions are highly encouraged. And you can also safely assume that any ingredient in a recipe for paint back in those days was highly toxic.
Yeah.
So a safe bet would be
most
lead
likely lead.
Cadmium. Yeah. Mercury.
Do you guys find that when you take people on these tours, they're almost surprised at how much history is around here?
Yeah, some people were completely fascinated by it, even the people that have lived locally for 40, 50 years. There's always something that they don't know and questions that they ask that I could probably answer for them.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things about a walking tour of a historic town is, you know, you hear some of these names that are associated with towns, obviously the Ellicotts and the Carrolls and things of that nature, which are more local history figures. But then to actually see where they conduct business or where they may have lived. And I think also another thing that you know, we were talking also off air before that a lot of people take for granted their history, their own history. And, you know, you grow up around Ellicott City and as a young man, even myself, you know, I'd come to old Ellicott City all the time for shopping and going to restaurants and going out to the bars or so on and so forth. But you look around and you see all these phenomenal buildings that you just, like, you don't know what the historic significance is. Mm-hmm. So I think our history tour has the benefit of being attractive to two different types of tourists. One, someone who's never been to Ellicott City and they're just fascinated by all the history. But the ones I think, and maybe Tony can agree or disagree with me on this, are the people who are from Ellicott City, who have seen these buildings and been around these buildings most of their lives, but knew nothing about it, and then are fascinated to hear the stories about these buildings. I think that's where I get the best feedback.
Definitely so. And those same folks are the ones that ask the best questions and also provide the best feedback. Because if there's any little fact or detail that I might be skipping or overlooking, it's always right in my face, and that's good. I mean, you want to know more about that. That's just something I can bring up at another time.
What do you guys think is the most fascinating part of history of Ellicott City, I guess, individually?
It changes for me, considering this is what I do for a living. I uncover new stuff all the time that make me go, wow. I'm always fascinated with the jails, especially the Emory Street Jail. What fascinates me about Howard County is how we have as ugly of a racial history as some of your deep South states. You know, some of the things you read in textbooks about how awful, you know, slavery was, or even Reconstruction, the years after the Civil War. And you think that, you know, just I think just generally you tend to think, oh, that happened in places like Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, things of that nature. Oh, it happened here. Lynchings, violence, racial violence. I mean, Howard County was a slave county. The after effects of slavery affected this county just like any other. And I think that's one of the things that tends to be, I guess, interesting from a historical standpoint, because we live in Howard County now. It's very diverse, mm-hmm. and very, very accepting of other cultures. Well, it wasn't always like that. And mm-hmm. I think that's the part for me when you start doing your research about some of the power players in this town and the way that minorities were treated. That's the eye-opening and most interesting part of it for me.
Right now in Ellicott City, we see a huge dynamic. It's very energetic, very vibrant. I mean, it's come a long way since the mills closed and then the town transitioned into a place where people actually wanted to hang out on a weekend. What fascinates me is the way it was back, you know, in the late 1800s, early 1800s, 1820, 1830, when the mills were in full production. If I could only just go back to that time and see exactly, you know, all the cloth and the textiles and the clothes and the nails and the logs and all the building materials, and seeing the whole town as it was back then, because we know a lot of the buildings have come and gone since then. That's history enough. I talk about the building that's there now, not so much what used to be there. I mean, I can kind of talk about what used to be there before some of the big fires, but that was 1984 and 1999. To postulate that Ellicott Mills was the seat, was the industrious capital, the start of the Industrial Revolution is really something that's fascinating and that's, in my opinion, could be very much a possibility. The second thing is the Civil War. I mean, there's so much I don't know about the Civil War, but there's so much that I do know about the Civil War, because Maryland being a divided state, we had brothers fighting brothers, mm-hmm. Confederacy versus the Union, you know, right there in Gettysburg. And the whole outcome of the Civil War, I know how Ellicott City played into it. I know it was largely a Union town that provided a lot of materials for the war. Because we have a direct route from on the train tracks right to the Inner Harbor, right down the seaport to the troops. But there were a lot of Confederate sympathizers in the town. I don't know nearly as much as I'd like to know about the Civil War, but that's a very fascinating part of the history that I'd like to learn more about.
Yeah, Tony mentioned one thing that I'll pick up on too, is interesting history of Ellicott City as at one point this bustling industrial town or pre-industrial town, and then after the big flood of 1868 and after the Civil War, I mean, you see the town just go into a major decline. And that decline really kind of, you don't really see it kind of pick back up until really after World War II. And it's interesting, I've got one of our archivists is Barbara Figge. Barbara Figge is the wife of former county councilman Charlie Figge. And she is a longtime Howard County resident. She's a Warfield. So if anybody knows anything about local history, Warfield, that's royalty here in Howard County. So she goes back generations. She tells a funny story about Ellicott City. I would ask her, how was Ellicott City, you know, when you were a child, when you were growing up? And you know, she grew up around that World War II era. And she goes, oh, we didn't go to Ellicott City when I was a child. We weren't allowed to go. So that's always an interesting aspect, too. I guess you could say the history of Ellicott City has got its ups and downs, and now it's seeing a nice little it's a nice Main Street historic area with great shopping, and it's a great tourist area now, but it wasn't always like that.
Yeah. So.
My understanding was that neither were any of the troops from any of the bases around here allowed to come down to
right.
Ellicott City.
No.
Wow. For that reason.
This was a wicked town.
It was a wicked town.
Do the walking tours cost anything?
Yeah, they're $10 for the walking tour. If you are a member of the Howard County Historical Society, they're $5.
Okay.
And we do include one of the stops is we stop at the museum, which gives folks a chance to catch a little air conditioning, use the restroom, and we as the Historical Society provide a bottle of water. Usually by the time they make it to the museum, they've drank whatever water they have. Yeah. So complimentary as a part of your experience, we provide some water.
And at the final stop, there's a $2 off coupon at the B&O Railroad Museum.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yep. So make a day of history.
That's right.
All right. So just a few more questions. How can people find out more about the walking tours themselves?
They can call 410-480-3250 is our main office number. They can either talk to myself or any of our volunteers who can certainly give them information. they can pick up brochures at either the archives or the museum, or they can go on the website, which is www.hchsmd.org. Click on the events tab, and you'll see it's got a complete listing of all of the dates that Tony does the tours.
Okay, and just last opportunity, you guys have already sold me on it, but why should people go to the walking tours?
Again, the immense amount of history. You get to dwell on what it was like back when the Ellicotts first started this place, when it was nothing but natural resources. You had all this beautiful granite, these huge first succession forests. You had local Indian populations. The history that predates the Ellicotts is pretty fascinating to find out about. Then to learn more about how they used the land to build this very thriving, and the river to build a very thriving industrious mill town is enough to satisfy any historian. If you have any curiosities at all about the way Ellicott City was, or the way what happened to it, the way it is now, this is a little bit of an off the grid tour that a lot of people really, really enjoy. I'd like to see some more younger people come in and check it out. We get some older folks that come and enjoy it, but if some college age kids came by, that would be really awesome. So I'd like to see that.
And I think another nice aspect of the tour is having Tony doing the tour, having an experienced tour guide who not only, like you said earlier, he understands obviously material, but he understands his group and he's able to cater to the group. An hour and a half is a long tour sometimes, but he always keeps them entertained, and all we ever hear is positive feedback, which is a testament to what Tony does. So not only are you getting a good tour, you're getting it from a good tour guide. I think that's a big part of it too.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining me today. Make sure to go out and check the Howard County Historical Society walking tours on every second and fourth Saturday of the month until October.
Yep.
Does it run through October or the beginning?
We'll go as long as the weather's nice.
Okay.
If the weather starts to turn on us, then we might pull back on a few. But as long as we're getting, 50, 60, mm-hmm. 70 degree 50, days.
60, but you never know about October. Usually October's pretty mild.
Yeah.
I think, what's the lowest we'll go? 30 degrees, 40
degrees?
Yeah,
I think we tried to push one into November last year. We're like, nah, this isn't working. So. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, guys. This has been Tony Hughes, the tour guide of the walking tours, and Sean Gladden, the executive director of the Howard County Historical Society.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Join Alex Baker and HCC film producer guests for an in-depth discussion on great directors and their essential films. Armchair Directors airs every Thursday at 9:30 and Sundays at 2:30. You can take us with you by downloading the Dragon Digital Radio app on the iPhone and Android App Store, or dragondigitalradio.podbean.com.
6 o'clock on Fridays and 10 a.m. on Saturdays is Fiesta Time with me, your friend, tu amiga, Cris Oviedo. The one and only show en español, El Dragón te trae caliente. Cris Oviedo, join me every Friday, 6 p.m., Saturday, 10 a.m. Take me with you. Download the app for the iPhone or for the Android. We are Dragon Digital Radio. Don't forget, caliente.
For Hoco Journal, I'm Alex Baker. With me here now, somebody I've had on the show a couple of times now, is Allie Jessing. She's from the Howard County Library, and she's going to talk about all the events coming up for the spring season. So, Allie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me back. I always like being here.
Yeah, it was a pleasure having you. So, I guess we'll just dive right into it. So, give us a brief overview of what you got coming up.
Well, we have a really cool new thing happening at the library. It's called the Human Library. And instead of checking out a book, you can come and check out a person. And the Human Library is an international initiative started about 10 years ago, I think, in Denmark. And it's a way to build community through dismantling stereotypes and prejudices through conversations. So at a Human Library, you come in and you can check out a person who's had a different life experience than you, whether they're a different religion, different culture, immigrant, mm-hmm. Community, life experiences, unlike yours. So when we generally, if we're afraid of something, it's because we don't know anything about it. Hmm. So when we meet people who are different than us and we begin to understand them as people and not as labels, that helps us overcome a lot of the tensions in our culture and our society and dismantles that xenophobia. So the goal of the Human Library is to create conversations between mm-hmm. people and build understanding and empathy. We have a really diverse catalog of human books. We have members of the Muslim community, the Sikh community, the LGBTQ community, the Christian community, immigrants. We have a survivor of genocide who came from a really amazing array of books, veterans and people you might pass on the street and not realize that they're different than you, but they have a story to tell. And in hearing their story, you can become more empathetic to other people in our community. So Howard County Library will be the first public library in Maryland to do one of these. So it's an experiment for us, but we're really excited about it. We're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. You know, at a time like this, I'm not going to get into specifics, but, you know, that's something that would really help, I think.
Right. We started planning this about a year ago, thinking this is something that could benefit any community, and it's just become more and more relevant as time wears on.
Definitely. And then so tell us a little bit about one of the big things you're really looking forward to in April.
Well, we have two really cool things coming up in April. One is author named Kate Hannigan, and she's the author of the Cupcake Cousins series, which is like a narrative mixed with recipes that are really fun. Oh. So you can kind of read the story and then enact what you're reading about through creating the recipes. And she's also the author of The Detective's Assistant, which is the story of Kate Warren, who is the first ever female detective employed by the Pinkertons.
Oh, cool.
And so The Detective's Assistant is about her niece kind of coming and, tagging along on the adventures. And it won the 2016 Golden Kite Award for Best Middle Grade Novel. So it's kind of a nail-biting, adventure story that also incorporates a lot of history around Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War. And then we are also welcoming the White House social secretaries from the Obama administration and the George W. Bush administration. Their names are Jeremy Bernard and Leah Berman.
Oh, okay.
And they are collaborating on a book about how to treat people well and how to get along with people even when you disagree on things. So as the White House social secretaries, they were in charge of planning all of the major social and highly visible engagements that happened in the White House. So they have a lot of experience with working with people of different backgrounds, cultures, and belief systems and political ideologies. And they still manage to always get along. And so they're writing a book about that. And it won't be released until later in the summer, but they're going to come out and have a kind of pre-publishing salon kind of author event with us April 8th at the Miller Branch. Kate Hannigan is on April 6th at the Miller Branch.
Yeah, it sounds like those events will be educational. Like the one you talked about with the cooking thing, it seems like, you can get kids interested in cooking and making whatever they want.
And cooking is science. So that actually goes back into a STEM philosophy of learning.
Okay, and then so moving on. So the last month in the spring is May. Just so tell us maybe some of the things you're excited for in that month.
On May 11th, we're going to welcome author Toby Devins, who's a best-selling author and actually from Columbia. So she's a local, well-known author. And she writes women's fiction mostly, but she's also writes short fiction and poetry and articles that have been excerpted all over the place, many national magazines, including Reader's Digest and Parents magazines. So she writes a lot about the personal challenges and family dynamics that go along with relationships.
Oh, okay.
Something I think we can all identify with at one level and of another. And then about the bonds of friendship and how friendship can sometimes replace family on occasion. So we're really looking forward to having her at the Miller Branch on May 11th.
Okay. And then you've already been talking about it a little bit. So of the author visits, you already named a few. One other thing I noticed was Ned Tillman.
Yeah, Ned Tillman actually coming. He'll be at the Central Branch on April 20th. It's kind of a kickoff to Earth Day. Ned's book, Saving the Places We Love, is the 2016-17 Howard County Book Connection selection. So that's in partnership with HCC and HOCO Palitzo. It's something the library, HCC, and Palitzo do together. And Ned writes about how we are invested in saving our local environments because we live there, and how everybody was invested in saving their local environments. That would all kind of connect, and then we'd have massive sweeping changes. So he writes about what the steps you can take towards that goal are. And we had him at the library a few months ago. It was a huge crowd, really great event. And we decided we needed to do that again because there was so much interest. So he'll be at the Central Branch just prior to Earth Day talking about saving the places we love and what kind of steps and goals we can take and establish to help preserve our local environments.
Okay, and then another thing, as a big movie fan, I'm always interested in seeing what movies you got coming up. And you, looking at your list, you have quite a few, don't you?
Yeah, we do. After doing, we have our new release cinema at our East Columbia branch. Now, the East Columbia branch is actually closed for renovations, but you can still actually go to the classes and events we're hosting there because the senior, or I'm sorry, the 50 plus center, which is attached to the branch, is still open.
Oh,
so they're being very kind and letting us do some events in their space. So we'll still be having our new release cinema on April 13th and May 11th.
Some other events I thought were kind of interesting. One you got coming up is Lego Wars. So tell us a bit about that.
Lego Wars, yeah, right. Lego Wars is really fun. It's an event for people ages 11 to 18, and you get 150 Lego pieces and you have 45 minutes to build something awesome. Mm. So whatever you can create out of that 150 pieces, you know, the world is yours. What can you do with this 150 pieces in 45 minutes? So then we kind of look at what kind of creations and creativity people can exercise in that amount of time. So it's really fun.
One thing I kind of like coming up you got is stop motion animation. So tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, so our stop motion animation class is happening on Thursday, April 12th. I'm sorry, April 13th at 2 p.m. And it's Howard County schools are closed that day. So if you've got a student in a Howard County school and you want a good activity for the afternoon, this is a great one. So the participants will be learning the basics of stop motion animation, which is when you you know, you have a small figure and it's, you take a photograph of it, you move it slightly, take another photo, and when those photos are edited together, it creates the illusion of continuous motion. So inanimate objects appear to move just through this very careful photography. So students will be learning about the principles of that, kind of how that works, and then creating kind of a team video using that technique in the class. On Thursday, April 13th.
Yeah, and it was interesting. I was watching something on Turner Classic Movies recently, and they had the guy who did Kubo and the Two Strings, which is a stop-motion animated movie this year that was a big hit.
Yeah.
And he was talking about just the process of it, and he would say just like something he would work all day on something, it would amount to like 2 minutes of footage. Mm-hmm. So you just talk about how, you know, how a lot of work that is. But the product is something like Kubo, it looks really amazing.
Right. It's a lot of effort that and you don't really get a sense of it till you see the final product, how much goes into creating just a second.
Yeah.
It can take all day. Yeah.
And then let's see another one. So you're coming up, I guess, is the sinking of the Titanic. So tell us about, you're going to do something special for that.
So on Saturday, April 15th at noon, we have a class for students ages 9 to 12 about the Titanic, and it's happening on or close to the anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. And students are going to look at the STEM concepts that are related to that tragedy. Like, what happened mechanically, environmentally, scientifically? Why did the Titanic sink? What were what was the scientific reason behind that sink, or that tragedy? So Titanic was billed as unsinkable, and we all know it wasn't. What went wrong? What were the consequences, or what were the factors that went into that?
And like, what would you have done differently to avoid it?
Right. And how did it inform how later ships were designed, and how did it inform how we look at kind of our understanding of those principles of design?
Oh, cool. And then let's see. You got another one. Looks interesting. Tell us a little bit about Culture Fest.
Culture Fest this year is going to be really cool. It's going to be a celebration of Oceania, so that is Australia, New Zealand, and the Pacific Islands.
Oh, okay.
So we'll have performers, demonstrations, culture groups, food. Always the best part. Highlighting Oceania. So. It's going to be a really, really fun afternoon. That is on Sunday, May 7th at the Miller Branch. And that's a partnership with the Columbia Association's International Exchange and Multicultural Program. So it'll be a great, great afternoon. Food, music, fun time.
Okay, and then also another one I liked coming up was Vietnam Veterans Traveling Exhibit. So what is that all about?
Yeah, that is a really cool thing that we were able to offer through a partnership with Maryland Public Television. Maryland Public Television actually developed this exhibit, and it's traveling around the state. And it recognizes and thanks our veterans in the communities of Maryland who served in the military during the Vietnam War. There's an interaction element where children can color different coloring pages as thank yous to veterans, mm-hmm. as well as stationery. So if you want to write a thank you note to a veteran, it will be incorporated into it's that's part of the exhibit. So you can write that note and it will be delivered to a veteran to share your message. And we will have that on display at our central branch from May 9th to June 11th.
Okay, and then you talked a little bit earlier about STEM. And so one other thing I know this is, I think it's a STEM-related event, is Girl Power.
Yeah, Girl Power is a chance for, well, anybody can participate. You don't have to be a girl. Boys are welcome as well. Mm-hmm. To come in and kind of make these connections and network and with different members of the community and find ways to make a difference in your community. So we have three different classes this spring designed around this kind of theme of girl power. And at each class, there will be different activities mm-hmm. to contribute towards the community. So on March 18th, we're working with Colorful Abandoned Tie-Dyeing, and they create tie-dyed bandanas and handmade cards to go to charities. On April 15th, we're working with Build a Habitat. And then on May 13th, we're working with Girls Who Code HOCO, and they're a coding collective. So three really great opportunities to meet people and get a chance to do something within the community to make it a better place.
All right. And then another thing I noticed is an interesting, you're somewhat, in a way, bringing Hamilton, the popular Broadway play, you're bringing it somehow into Howard County Library. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, it's actually, that's a partnership with Red Branch Theater Company in Columbia. And we're starting a new series with them called Page to Stage. And it's kind of a survey of popular plays and musicals and performances in American history, and how the kind of the behind the scenes understanding of how they came to have that place. It also celebrates diverse voices that may not get as much recognition as they deserve. So that's going to be a 3-part series, and we're kicking off our first one on May 15th with Hamilton. Everybody knows Hamilton. Everybody's pretty infatuated with Hamilton. Everybody sings Hamilton lyrics to themselves in the shower. But that started as an 836-plus page biography that was translated into this cultural phenomenon. So the class on May 15th, with it's going to feature the Red Branch Theater artistic staff and their performers, and they're going to kind of break that down for us. How did it translate from a very heavy, dense book, very good book, but a dense one, into this completely revolutionary experience in American theater? And how did that operate to change kind of our conventions of American theater? One of the great things about Hamilton is the diversity of the cast, the new and kind of creative approach to lyricism. So they're going to talk about how all of those factors made this so popular today.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, musical like that comes from a play about Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Okay, and so last question I'll have for you is just tell us where listeners can go to learn more about Howard County and maybe check out more of these events we've mentioned.
Oh, everything is on hclibrary.org.
Okay, fantastic. This has been an interview with HOCO Journal. I've been talking with Allie Jessing from the Howard County Library to talk about all the events going on. Allie, once again, I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
For HOCO Journal, I'm Alex Baker. We'll be right back on Dragon Digital Radio.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. But when we introduce a new stimulus, save the food, we're helping to stop food waste. Save the food. For tips and recipes, visit savethefood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
That's it for our show today. Thanks to our producers and guests, not only for taking the time to speak with us, but also for all that you do to make our community a better place. Sincerely, thank you. Don't forget to connect with us through social media, our website, and our podcast page. If you would like to come in and share your story, contact me at moviedo@howardcc.edu or connect with me via Facebook at our page, Dragon Digital Radio. Or if you like to connect directly with me, you can search me and find me as Cris Oviedo. Stay healthy, happy, positive, and blessed. And remember to take advantage of all the festivities coming up in the next few months. Until next month, I am Cris Oviedo.